Chapter 8. Imprisoned. Trial upon the battlements. Banners of the Third Legion. Jaya still counted the days, though it was a matter of instinct rather than intent. Time had little meaning between the unchanging walls of her confinement cell, but the regularity of her two meals a day made for a schedule that couldn't easily be forgotten, especially since there was nothing else to do but eat and sleep. And wait, of course. There was always waiting to do. The servitor that brought her the nutrient paste was monotasked to the point of lobotomy, rendering it useless for information, let alone conversation. On the few occasions she'd pressed it for details regarding the date of her execution, all that had emerged from its wet mouth were a few wordless grunts. She didn't think the thing had long left to live. It looked halfway dead already, with its cataract-milked eyes and black teeth showing between its eternally slack lips. The cell had been comfortable at first, a fact that had surprised her, given the nature of her crime. The sleeping slab was padded, and the walls were a smooth, dry granite, with a thermal strip emanating a modest breath of warmth, rather than the dank, moss-covered stone of the prison cells her family had maintained in the dungeons of her ancestral home, Castle Highrock. There was even a chest for her possessions, few though they were in captivity. She used the chest to store the cheap tin pots of nutrient paste they had been feeding her since she arrived. Jaya, at 51 years of age, had never been in prison before, but she was a cautious soul. Leaving a little in each pot and building up a stockpile seemed wise, just in case they suspended her rations as a form of punishment. She could have broken and bent the tin pots, fashioning them into slivers of knives, but as weapons, such shards would be flimsy and next to useless. She could slash up the servitor that brought her meals, but wounding the damn thing wouldn't do anything to improve her situation. For one, it might cut off her food supply completely. For two, it would be the pettiest of acts, striking a defenseless and mindless cyborg like that. A truly honourless kill. No war banner would fly in the great hall of Castle Highrock to celebrate that little victory. So she let the thing live. Her other option was to cut her own wrists, which was no option at all. It wasn't that she found the notion distasteful. It was that suicide could only be sanctioned as penance for sins against the code of chivalry, not to escape the consequences of crime. Honour demanded that she live until her execution. The fact that her captors left her access to ways of killing herself showed their true disregard. It would likely be a convenience for them if she did end her own life. She exercised to maintain her health, pushing herself up from the stone floor until the sweat ran from her thinning form, gluing her worn and filthy uniform to her flesh. She ate the thick nutrient paste and drank the brackish, repeatedly filtered water they gave her. She slept in her clothes, refusing to shed her uniform even in captivity. For the first few weeks, she'd been appalled and increasingly sickened by the smell rising from her unwashed body. But by the second month, the stench had simply gone away. She suspected it was still there. She was merely so used to her own stink that it no longer registered to her senses. Finger-combing her hair had only worked for the first week. Soon enough, she'd been reduced to binding it back in a ponytail using one of her bootlaces. When she went to her cell's metal door, all she could see were the smooth walls of the corridor stretching in either direction, lit by dull and flickering lumen orbs. It wasn't until the third day that she'd realized she wasn't alone down here. A shout, more of a frustrated scream in truth, had echoed down the corridor. She'd called back, her lungs raw from the dungeon's bad air, asking who was out there.
"Baroness!"
The reply had come, miserable with hope. She'd burst into laughter. One of her courtiers was caged nearby.
"Sevek? Baroness! I don't suppose you have a comb, do you?"
One courtier had turned out to be several. They conducted shouted conversations in the days that followed, such behaviour simply ignored by their captors. They grew quieter over time. What was there to say? How many times could they force good-natured laughter about their fate as they all started losing weight and feeling their teeth loosening in their gums? The Baroness understood. She fell silent too, in the same way, for the same reasons. She withdrew within herself, not to hide, but to survive. She refused to be dragged before a firing squad as a ruined echo of herself, so she exercised. She stored her rations just in case. She composed battle verses in her mind or recited old saga poems, singing them aloud in a voice that grew shakier week by week. At first, she tried to sing once a day, and her courtiers had joined in. As their strength failed, the real silence took hold. She'd sometimes hear one or two of them groaning or murmuring in their cells far down the corridor. Starvation walked among them, caressing with gnawed fingers. On the 151st day, the servitor came with no food. It stood before her door, the interface slot drawn back and open, and mimed pushing the tin pot through the gap. Its pale hand was empty, but the mimed action was perfect. It behaved as it always did, not acknowledging that it was delivering a handful of stale air. She watched it from where she'd been exercising, performing slow sit-ups with her boots to the wall. She watched the servitor slide the flask of water through next, no different from usual. She saw the powdery filtration crystals, like silt at the bottom of the flask, spreading their bitter purity through the drink. And then she watched the servitor leave. Was this punishment? A mistake in allotting food rations? The possibility passed through her mind, icy and unwelcome, that this was the form her execution would take. Perhaps they wouldn't haul her before a firing squad after all, to let her die proud in her uniform. They'd starve her instead. At best, she would be buried in a pauper's grave on Terra itself, a malnourished husk of her former self. At worst, they would throw her body into a funereal incinerator, along with worn-down servitors and the prisoners who ended their own lives in dishonour. She took the flask of water, not yet giving in to panic. She had supplies. She had a few weeks' worth of the nutrient-rich gruel built up that she could fall back on. The shouting started up again as the day passed. The other prisoners were going through the same farce, being served nothing by the servitor jailer, too mind-locked to realise what it was doing wrong. All the Baroness could do was wait. If the servitor returned later that night and repeated its hollow actions, then she would know something was amiss. Until then, she wouldn't give in to the rush of fear. Fear was useful. It told you when you should be alert and aware, but it became a poison if allowed to take root. The deeper it nestled in the heart, the more it affected judgment and played havoc with reason. She passed the hours exercising, meditating, and letting the stale water fill her stomach in place of the rationed paste. When the servitor returned exactly 8 hours later, right on cue, she rose to her feet and approached, watching the cyborg's pallid hands. Again, it went through the motions of feeding her with nothing in its grip. This time it repeated the gesture. The flask it offered to quench her thirst was empty. The filtration crystals were piled at the bottom, as dry as desert sand. No food, no water. The Baroness closed her eyes, listening to the servitor's retreating tread. She could accept the fall of a headsman's axe or the gunline stare of a firing squad, but a life spent sheathed in steel had ill-prepared her to feel this helpless. Her hands closed into fists, slowly, firmly, her knuckles showing white.
If I breathe, I am unbeaten. If I fight, I am unbroken.
She raced to the door, pounding on it with the heels of her fists, shouting the words over and over, letting them fill the long corridors of the prison complex.
If I breathe, I am unbeaten. If I fight, I am unbroken.
The words echoed back at her, shouted by dozens of throats, taking up the old familiar banner cry. One day became two. That was all the evidence she needed. The Baroness decided to act before 2 days became three. There was moisture in the nutrient paste, though scarcely enough to sustain a human body. Soon enough, the Baroness was looking at her cell through gummy, dehydrated eyes, and clutching a shard of can that she'd shaped into a flimsy knife after all. She was under no illusions that killing her servitor jailer would improve her lot in life, but destroying it might trip some kind of system alarm, letting her real captors know that she and her courtiers were dying of thirst and starvation. If no one came to deal with the slain jailer, then at least she'd know whether this was to be her execution. It wouldn't be difficult. The servitor lacked any obvious counter-threat systems or retaliatory weapons beyond its cylindrical shock maul, which it was far too slow and run down to use with any speed. All she'd need to do is drag the jailer's hands into the food slot, stun the thing by crashing its face against the door, then cut its wrists with the crude knife. It would likely go back to its duties, bleeding out along the way and hopefully triggering some kind of prison-wide alarm. Hopefully. When she heard the distant thump of its bionic-legged tread, she clutched the knife tight enough that blood ran from her palm. Dehydration greyed out the edges of her senses, dulling her hearing and making every vein in her skull throb with abandon. But she still managed to rise to her feet and, without consciously realizing she was doing it, straighten her ragged, sweat-soiled uniform. "If I breathe, I am unbeaten." The words were a savage whisper. "If I fight, I am unbroken."
"Please stand away from the door,"
the servitor intoned from behind the sealed metal portal. The jailer had never spoken before. She doubted it even could. For a moment she wondered if her thirst-slowed thoughts had conjured the words as an auditory hallucination. It certainly didn't sound the way she'd expected. A flash of gold metal shone on the other side of the food slot.
"What the—"
That wonder was banished as a meter-long spear blade rammed through the reinforced door with a ringing crash. It slid back out to be replaced by golden fingers reaching into the wound. She saw them curl and grip, then wrench the puncture open with a horrendous whine of abused iron. The door came free of the wall, sending tremors through the ground. She flinched at the bang of its twisted remains dropping onto the corridor's stone floor. The figure that entered wasn't the servitor. It had to stoop to fit through the doorway.
"Baroness Jaya Dacus, Warden of Hyrok."
"A custodian? I'm honored."
Her voice was a parched ruin. It shamed her to show any weakness at all before a foe, but she'd be damned before she stood there in silence.
"Have you come to execute me at last?"
"I'll accept that as an affirmation. My name is Diocletian Chorus of the 10,000, Prefect of the Hykonotoi. Come with me, please, Baroness."
"I request the right to die in a clean uniform."
"Very civilized. And I'm sure that one day you'll die in that exact manner. However, I am not going to kill you. You've been pardoned."
"The Sigillite would never overturn my sentence."
"The Sigillite had never sentenced you at all. Amidst the war's endless bureaucracy, I suspect he forgot you even existed until you were needed. You are pardoned in the Emperor's name. Now come with me, unless you want your baronial court to keep rotting in their cells."
She followed, though cautiously.
"Needed?"
she asked.
"We are needed."
The custodian didn't reply. Immediately outside her cell stood another towering warrior, not quite as tall as the custodian, but still two heads above her. He was clad in red rather than gold, and carried his helmet under his arm, a crested portcullis faceplate of a thing, with a green visor dulled in deactivation. Symbols of white wings adorned his armor plating, as did elaborate silver filigree. His features held nothing of sensuality, yet the truth remained. He was, quite literally, the most beautiful man Jaya Dacus had ever seen. The artistry of living beauty rendered in marble. An angel of myth, stricken by the hauntingly elegant pallor of consumption.
I am Zephon, he said with a polite bow. His voice, low yet brutally soft, was made to sing beneath the stars. Drea looked between the two warriors.
Free my court. Then for the love of all that is holy, please tell me what's going on.
Dozens of them stood blinking and sore in the weak sunlight. Clad in the faded and filthy uniforms in which they'd been imprisoned, they nevertheless stood in orderly ranks, as they would upon the High Rock parade ground. Jaya's spirits soared to see them muster in such defiant order on the back of enduring such privation. Her hopes sank soon after. With the courtiers were their attendants, several sacristans for every scion, and the robed tech adepts had seemingly suffered far more than their masters. They gathered in loose, wheezing, shaking packs. It smote the Baroness's heart to see that her house's revered engineers had been treated so poorly. The court of High Rock, ragged and worse for wear but free at last, stood on the battlements of the mountainous outer palace. Thrusting up from among the lance-like spires to the west was the Sabarakan Tower, haloed by the watery eye of the setting sun. Jaya resisted the urge to spit at the sight. Engines whined, plaintive and distant, somewhere in the clouds above them. Three figures faced them as they waited in ranks. Jaya regarded each of them in turn, cautious of each and mistrusting them equally. The Blood Angel watched the gathered courtiers and their attendants, standing unhelmed in the acrid, polluted breeze. The gentle wind's fingers plucked at his golden hair. His arms, both bionic replacements, were crossed over the X made by the reinforced cables across his breastplate. He was at once fiercely focused and utterly serene, making no threatening move, making no move at all that wasn't inspired by the breeze. By contrast, the custodian paced before them, his burnished features set in neutral regard. The long spear that marked his order was held at his side in one gloved hand. Eyes so pale they were practically colourless stared from his oversized tanned features, catching the gaze of every man and woman willing to meet it. The woman seemed to be their leader, or at least they deferred to her in some unknowable way. She was human to Jaya's eyes, externally unaugmented, tattooed with an imperial aquila upon her keen features, and clad in archaic armour of bronze chain links and golden platework. A hand-and-a-half power sword rode upon her back, the weapon sheathed and deactivated. The power generator in its hilt took the form of a golden eagle spreading its wings to form the quillions.
"I haven't seen a blink," Sevik murmured beside Jaya.
The Baroness hushed him with a glance. She still suspected this all to be some bizarre ritual before their mass execution. The custodian looked back over his shoulder. The sword maiden nodded, and the golden warrior began.
"Baroness," said the warrior of the 10,000, "step forwards."
Jaya did so. She walked towards him, and as proud and straight-backed as she was after over 30 years of leading armies in High Rock's name, she barely reached the custodian's armoured stomach. The warrior towered 3 heads taller than her. She held back a little to maintain her dignified posture and not indulge in the foolishness of craning her neck.
"You are Jaya Darkus, Warden of High Rock, Baroness of House Viridian. Is that so?"
"Actually, I have rather more titles than that."
Since being fed and watered, albeit with a brief and dubious feast of yet more stale water and nutrient gruel, she was finding her voice again.
"March, her lady of the Eastern Barons, first scion of the Envolius Reach, crusader of the... Well, I won't bore you with my list of honours." "We would be here for some time if she did," said Devram Sevik with immaculate politeness from the first rank of courtiers.
Behind the custodian, the tattooed woman smiled faintly, as did the Blood Angel. The custodian did not.
"I am Diocletian of the 10,000,
he told her again, this time including all of her court in the proclamation of his name.
"With me are Dominion Zephon of the 9th Legion, and Sister Caria Catherine, one of the Emperor's own Oblivion Knights. The latter title meant nothing to the courtiers. Diocletian's sonorous voice carried to them with little effort, even against the wind that pulled gently at his red plume. It's said that House Viridian abandoned the Emperor and turned its cloak to march beneath the rebel banners of the War Master. Silence greeted this announcement, into which the custodian cast his lure. So tell me, Scions of Hyrulk, are you guilty or innocent? The courtiers stood resolute in silence, dignity incarnate, bound by oaths of fealty considered arcane even here at the heart of the Imperium. The Baroness would speak for them, and speak she did.
Guilty.
The custodian seemed to hesitate. He turned back to the Oblivion Knight, who dipped her head, bidding him continue. From the Golden Warrior's pause, Jaya wondered if her admission of guilt had taken the man by surprise.
Guilty, Diocletian repeated her confession. And yet, your hearth ship entered Terran skies and you surrendered into imprisonment. That speaks of repentance, or at least a willingness to be punished for your sins.
You did not ask of repentance or punishment, Jaya replied.
She stood straight, her hands clasped behind her back, loathing the unwashed smell rising from her dirty uniform.
You asked if we had marched with the War Master's rebels, and we have done exactly that. We have fired our weapons in anger upon souls loyal to the Emperor.
I see.
Diocletian rested his spear upon one shoulder guard. The setting sun turned his armour to fiery bronze.
Your scions marched alongside the Third Legion, conquering two worlds. You are responsible for the destruction of several hundred warriors and war machines of the Iron Hands, as well as innumerable thousands of their army reserve elements. You personally slew Baron Kells of the House Ryathan at the Battle of Mount Galheim.
In single combat,
Sevik pointed out. Diocletian's attention snapped to the courtier.
Are you your mistress's herald?
No, custodian.
Does she need you singing her achievements to the sky as if this were some tawdry baronial procession?
I suspect not, Golden One.
Indeed she doesn't. So be silent.
Diocletian paused again, and then added,
Slew Baron Kells of House Ryathan in single combat.
Jaya nodded.
As you say.
That's an impressive roster of treachery for such a brief involvement in the war. Tell me why you fired upon souls loyal to the Emperor, Baroness.
Viridian's oldest oaths are to the children of the Emperor.
It was Prince Fulgrim who descended to Hyrok, bringing the Emperor's light to spell the end of Old Night. We marched with his legion throughout the Great Crusade for three generations, as we vowed in our Declaration of Allegiance. When he called us to war again, we answered.
A matter of loyalty, then.
As you say,
she repeated. The war is no clean-cut matter away from Terra. Rumours fly over who is the betrayer and who is the betrayed. Worlds and battles are named with no knowledge of why they were held, lost, or fought. The Iron Hands sought to destroy our allies in the Third Legion. We held to our oaths, fighting for the sons of Prince Fulgrim.
And attacked several Imperial bastions.
A fact I do not deny, Custodian Diocletian. Is this a trial?
Yes, of sorts. So let us speak of regret and punishment, Baroness. Tell me what brings a very well-armed, well-supplied 2/3 of House Viridium from fighting at the side of the Emperor's children to surrendering their arms in the skies of Terra.
We were ordered into the field against the remnants of House Kells. We laid siege to their last citadel. Rather than curse us for our treachery, as the 10th Legion had done, they implored us to see reason, transmitting details of the wider war to our hearth ship. Maps and charts of the collapsing Great Crusade, reports of other battles, names of fallen worlds, word of the War Master's apostasy.
Diocletian snorted, the sound a mechanical bark through his helm's vocalizer.
And you simply believed them? You weren't concerned that this was enemy propaganda?
Drea felt the threat of anger.
We had no way of knowing for certain. One name emerged again and again, wretched in its terrible possibility.
I can guess that name.
It was Zephon who spoke, his voice soft.
Istvan.
Drea nodded.
Istvan. We could not break the truth apart from the lies. That day we refused to march against Kells. The Emperor's Children fleet fired upon us as we withdrew. Our support fleet sailed to High Rock with our sacred armors to return them to the Great Vault. My courtiers and I made the long journey to Terra aboard our empty hearth ship with a small contingent of our sacristans.
Diocletian's gaze raked across the orderly ranks once more.
And when you arrived?
When we arrived, seeking answers, we were imprisoned at once, and there we have remained until you freed us.
Diocletian shook his head.
You must have known execution awaited you on Terra.
Perhaps. We are oathbreakers. Thus we knew execution was deserved. Is that why we were being starved?
Diocletian sighed but didn't answer. The Blood Angel did.
No, Zephon said. That was merely the degeneration of unmonitored servitors. The palace's hierarchs are forced to turn their attention to 1,000 matters at once, and the breaking down of your servitor jailers was unlikely to have registered at all until it was far too late.
Drea clenched her teeth. Well, that answered that question. She had almost been executed by the stalled processes of disgusting Terran bureaucracy.
You were speaking of Terra, Diocletian prompted her, and the execution that awaited you.
We knew execution was possible, but the truth awaited us, custodian, and that meant more than death. Better an honourable end than a life spent wallowing in ignorant treason. We made a choice to risk death rather than become the generation whose entry in the High Rock archives records them as deceived into dishonour.
Again Diocletian turned to Kyria, and again she nodded. Something in the Oblivion Knight's eyes made Drea wonder if the silent sword maiden was granting permission at all. Surely no one but the Emperor held authority over the 10,000. Perhaps she was offering some subtle advice or judgment instead. Diocletian turned back to the Baroness with a whir of active armor joints.
I can offer you a fate you wouldn't be ashamed to etch into those archives, Baroness Darkus. But I will need more than your word. I will need your life. I will need you to march, fight, and likely die for the Emperor.
There was no hesitation at all.
Send to High Rock for our sacred armors, she replied, and our blood and steel will be the Emperor's coin to spend until the Imperium's last breath.
I can't do that.
For the first time in all of this madness, Drea felt the creeping chill of an unease that threatened to become fear.
Please explain yourself,
she said, breathy with restrained panic.
You made the right choice, Diocletian replied. To bring your war suits here would have risked them being melted down out of hate, or gifted to other houses as war spoil. But we can't send word to High Rock, Baroness. High Rock as you knew it no longer exists. It fell to the War Master's forces mere weeks after you were first imprisoned. A dead world orbits the sun in its place.
The stunned silence didn't last long. The unbelievable order and dignity held by the massed ranks slowly dissolved, and the gathered courtiers and tech adepts became the starving remnants of the Sabarakan isolation compound once again. Drea, above all the others, looked ravaged. She fell to her knees, struggling to breathe.
The whole world. The whole world.
The whole world, Diocletian confirmed. The Emperor's Children punished you for seeking the truth behind their treachery. They brought fire and ruin to High Rock. Now Third Legion banners wave in the wind above the ashes.
Drea was beyond words. The archives of a noble house that had endured the millennia of old night, marching to guard the people whose towns clung to the walls of its fortresses. Hundreds of generations of honourable vigil
defending the weak, adhering to oaths, watching over the sacred armors that have been the lifeblood and salvation of Hyrok for thousands of years. 14 million people in freeholds and fortress towns across the world. Gone. All gone. Failed by House Viridian, who had not been there to defend them, whose refusal to fight with the War Master's armies had brought annihilation. Jaya forced herself to her feet, too hollow to weep. She felt pain in a way starvation hadn't harmed her, deep and cold and cancerous. Above them, the engine sounds beyond the clouds drew closer. The sun had almost set now, lingering as a thin sliver, murky with pollution, above the horizon.
We will need confirmation.
It will be provided to you, Diocletian promised. We have orbital picts and surface imagery for you to study, Baroness.
Jaya nodded, unblinking, flensed to her core. The Oblivion Knight approached her then. Kyria met the older woman's eyes for several long seconds, and the Baroness stood before the stair, unflinching. Kyria broke the gaze and looked to Diocletian.
You're certain? The custodian replied.
The Oblivion Knight didn't answer. She returned to her place by the Blood Angel's side. Diocletian looked down into the Baroness's eyes.
I can offer you the Emperor's forgiveness, he said. And I can offer you revenge.
Jaya cleared her still raw throat.
House Viridian will take both.
Diocletian's cold eyelenses and golden faceplate revealed nothing of his rare admiration for how the human woman fought back her devastating grief.
I thought you might. You have a week to prepare, perhaps 10 days. We can spare no longer.
How are we to fight?
She asked, closing her eyes.
How can we serve the Emperor without our sacred armors?
I anticipated those very questions, Baroness.
The sky darkened with the arrival of a bulk lander. Its huge silhouette juddered overhead, great clawed landing gear grinding free of its housings.
And here, said Diocletian, is your answer.